High-profile African Americans gather in New Orleans, and a new show delves into the lives of Atlanta's black elite. For some, it's not a pretty picture. We've got that and more on our Bloggers Roundtable with Mark Lamont Hill, a professor of American Studies at Temple University. He blogs at marklamonthill.com, plus The Root. Felicia Harvey is the editor of Black Politics on the Web, and pop culture critic Desmond Burton runs Afro Nerd. He also hosts Afro Nerd Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Hi, folks.
Hello.
Hey, how's
Hello.
It going?
Doing great. So let's start off with this conference. Hundreds of African Americans of prominence are meeting in New Orleans this week for the State of the Black World Conference. It's going to feature a who's who of black America, elected officials, educators, hip-hop artists. Mark, what's your role?
You know, I'm going to be down there in the opening Indaba ceremony for new leaders. And so there'll be sort of new generation of black leadership and activists, organizers, academics, and so forth. On panels, and I'll be on that opening panel, and I'll be on a few other panels on education and urban policy, and really just trying to take part in a really good conversation about how we can continue to move the black agenda forward.
Now, one blogger wrote us, the black community will never let racism die. They'll ride that horse for all it's worth. They want to talk about being equal, but at every corner they have to bring up stuff like this. You know, do you think this is a situation? We just talked about this actually, you know, today on the show, very interesting comment from Ron Christie, who was like, why do we need all this black stuff? Why does the Congressional Black Caucus still exist? I'm sure we're going to get some comments on that. But why do you think this conference is important?
Well, because irrespective of who's in the White House or who's in the Congress or who's on the Supreme Court, everyday black people still experience, you know, lack of access to housing, health care, education. You know, there are still enormous disparities in everything from life expectancy to infant mortality. All of these, we pay more, we work harder for less money. You know, even if you control for class, we still have these extraordinary issues, you know, bearing upon our circumstance. And so we as a community have to come together and talk about these issues, not simply to blame the government or simply to talk about self-help exclusively, but to have a really nuanced and sophisticated conversation about how we can move an agenda forward. To talk about black issues isn't to be divisive or to ignore the fact that these are quintessentially American problems, but it's to take responsibility for our community and to begin to move forward.
Now, Felicia, do you think that the best part of these conferences, if you support them at all, is what's said or the networking that goes on?
I would say probably a little bit of both, but to me, the value in these conferences is not really what's said or the networking. It's in the action that happens after the conference. And that's the one thing that I would want to stress about this conference. It's important to talk about solutions, but it's even more important to come out with an action plan of how do you put these solutions into action? And more importantly, how do you put these solutions into action at the local level? How do you actually implement the change that you've discussed?
Now, Desmond, do you think that these conferences can also be exclusionary? Because, you know, the reality is it costs money to try to get anywhere. If you're gathering people in one specific location, you're always going to force or ask some people to carry the freight. There's also the question of whether or not the invitations are inclusive or exclusive. Do you ever have a problem? And, you know, this is an issue that comes up with everything from the Black Journalist Conference to State of the Black Union. Do you ever have a problem with how conferences are structured in terms of who's in and who's out?
Well, to a certain degree, I think they are exclusionary. I think that exclusionary, if not economically, more so politically. I colloquially speak about this on AfroNerd, and I kind of call the State of the Black Union, which I think is probably the brother version of this, as the cornbread and greens affair that Tavis Smiley produces, because and I say it jokingly,
wow.
But
oh boy,
but I know you'll probably get letters, but I mean this is what we're really dealing with. I remember when Mike Steele was on there and he had to apologize for being a conservative, and we just can't seem to have alternative speak during these kind of things. So I have a problem with just exclusive politically progressive voices on these things. I mean, let me just finish my point.
I thought you were done.
Are we going to see the same platitudes and protestations by Cornel West? Is he going to do, Dr. Dyson, he's going to do his same Jay-Z's version of 99 Problems? What are we going to really get out of these conferences?
Well, what are we going to get, Mark?
Well, I think one thing is, with regard to the first point, with regard to Tavis's conference, which is a little bit different, Republicans are invited all the time. Michael Steele got a warm reception at that event. And I think one of the reasons you don't see more diverse political representation is that many brothers on the right don't come to the event, or they decline the invitation. But at this event, I mean, you'll see a wide range of the political spectrum. You'll see far radical leftists. You'll see people who are moderates and centrists, the sort of Obama crowd. You'll also see black conservatives there. And what you'll see beyond the talk, and Michael Eric Dyson will be there, I hope. In fact, I'm sure he will be. Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, all these people will be here because they bring extraordinary insight into our issues and problems. But in addition to that, you'll also see grassroots activists trying to link these conversations to on-the-ground activism, not just sort of in talk, but in action the next day, the next week, and the next month. And I think that's one of the things you'll see is smaller sessions, which are devoted not just to talking, but to actually forming networks, to connecting the people, and to coming up with plans for the future. You can never solve local problems at a national conference, but what you can do is reignite the base, so to speak. You can lay out some issues. You can also form networks, and then you can hit the ground running when you get back home. I think we're going to do that this time.
All right. I just have to throw in to this, whatever your observations are about what you see on the ground, you say you can't solve local problems through a conference like this. But really, what people are dealing with now, although it starts at the top, it is very local. So I want to ask each of you to describe to me what you are seeing in your communities. Felicia, you're in Florida. What are you seeing in terms of the impact on the housing market, job market, even on your friends and family?
Well, everything's pretty much depressed, and it's causing people to be depressed. You see, the housing market is not—it's not that great, especially here in Florida, where you have this big housing bubble. Folks bought houses that cost a lot of money. The houses are not nearly worth what they were when they purchased them. The job market's not that great. People are losing jobs. People are losing their homes, and I guess there's kind of a general feeling of just unease. And I think right now, my family, my friends, people I speak to, they're just putting a lot of effort into making ends meet and trying to get by and remain optimistic that things are going to change. A lot of people were very excited about this election. A lot of folks got involved in manners and in ways that they hadn't been involved before. And right now, the hope is just that same energy and enthusiasm you used in this particular campaign cycle, you used locally to help advocate for those issues, to help make the economic situation here locally in Tampa and in the state of Florida more acceptable to everyone, to make everyone's reality a little better, just as a result of all the momentum that we've had as of late.
Desmond, what do you see going on? And, you know, is there any solutions-oriented work going on where you are?
I really don't think so. I mean, from what I see personally, I see home foreclosures. I know friends personally that are going through that kind of crisis. I see some degree of forced pragmatism on some people, but there are others that feel that things have always been the same thing, same way for black folks. So it depends on who you're talking to and what class level you're talking about. But for some black folks, it's the same, and for others, forced pragmatism.
Forced pragmatism, do you think it could be a good thing? I mean, sometimes people make better judgments when their backs are to the wall. Do you see any people around you, for example, sometimes when people have lots of money, they don't save. But then when they have a little money, they realize that maybe they do need a nest egg. And so there's this strange psychology. Have you seen people doing any of that?
Yes, I have. I mean, it has put you up against the wall. Definitely, there's certain things that you just cannot get away with anymore. I know, again, personally, with gas, even though gas is coming down to a certain degree, I still look at the gas tank. I'm more cognizant of it. So I think that things are changing for the best as far as our mental attitudes. But there are still others who, I mean, even pop, from a pop culture standpoint, I see hip hop still talking about Patron and that kind of thing. And I'm scratching my head and like, why are we still dancing with champagne and women's behinds are still bouncing and that kind of thing? Nothing is changing. For some people, things are changing. For others, it is not.
All right. Speaking of pop culture, perfect segue into The Real Housewives of Atlanta. Now, This is the third season. I have to admit, I was having a let's clean the house moment, and this is not my usual kind of thing, but I was just like, I think my jaw was on the floor, and I watched like four episodes during their marathon. And anyway, here's a little bit of The Real Housewives.
Anybody want a bitch tonight? We're going to start bidding on this bitch at $2.
If it doesn't make me money, I don't do it. I always knew I was destined for greatness.
I don't keep up with the Joneses. I am the Joneses.
In Atlanta, money and class do give you power.
People are intimidated by my success.
All right, it's attitude with a snarl. Mark, is this the kind of thing, you know, it's, when you talk about going to a conference like yours, are people really looking up to folks like you who've got degrees, intellectualism, or do folks want to just really still be blingy? And what, you know, is this TV series influencing behavior, or I mean, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I'm catching up on the whole season right now. And as I've gone through it, I find it to be really fascinating. In some ways, it's not that different than a whole bunch of other stuff we watch. I'm a reality TV junkie, so I watch all the Flavor of Loves and the Rocks of Love and all these love shows and all this stuff. And they're all essentially the same to me. And they provide very dangerous representations of Black women, of gender relationships, of consumerism. And they do have a troubling impact, not just on adults, but on the young people who watch these things. So I think we need to challenge it all the way around. The other piece of this, though, I think, is the fact that much of the anxiety that you hear is a middle class or upper middle class anxiety about having their lifestyles being represented by these people at this time. In other words, a lot of the people I hear with outrage about Housewives of Atlanta don't have anything to say about Flavor of Love or some of the other sort of ignorant shows that come on TV. But now they're like, oh, my God, this isn't how rich people should be represented. This isn't how, you know, the black wealthy should be represented. And so their anxiety is more about having the sort of nouveau riche represent old money or take the place of old money in the public space rather than really having some trouble with the way black women or black people are represented on TV in a larger sense.
Felicia.
And the funny thing is, I think I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I hate reality television. I hate it. I refuse to watch it. I got conned into watching the Real Housewives of Atlanta marathon, and I did get hooked. And I was hooked because it was like watching a train wreck. It was horrible. And I think my problem with it, because you asked early on when we were leading into the segment, is it good for the race? Is it good for ratings? It's terrible for the race, mainly because we don't have the positive portrayals on television to balance all the ignorance of the Flavors of the Love and the Real Housewives of Atlanta. We don't have those positive representations as well to kind of balance that off. But now, is it good for ratings? Unfortunately, it is. And as long as people continue to watch these shows, they're going to continue to come on. So it's up to us to make positivity profitable. If we don't support and watch those shows that have positive portrayals or neutral portrayals of African Americans, then all we're going to get 20 years from now when Flavor of Love is on season 29, we're going to be complaining because that's the only thing that's on television.
All right. You get to round it out here, Desmond. Good for the race? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs sideways?
Well, in some respects, I'm tired of this concept of black representation to begin with. I think I hate to be cautious of inferencing Obama in every second, but it seems foolish to constantly deal with this neo-minstrelsy, is what I call it. If anything, there should be a new revenue stream developed to show a different side of blackness. You have black rock artists. You have a black alternative hip hop artist. You have different
people doing
things.
And we'll be hearing later in the
things.
Show from Darius Rucker, who's now a country artist.
Exactly. Yeah. So we need to see more of these viewpoints of blackness, and to constantly go back to Burt Williams 2008. It's tired.
All right, great place to leave it. Thanks, guys.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good one.
You too. So we've been talking with Felicia Harvey, editor of Black Politics on the Web. She was at member station WUSF in Tampa, Florida. Mark Lamont Hill, who teaches American Studies at Temple University. He blogs at marklamonthill.com and The Root. He was at Audio Post Studios in Philadelphia. And pop culture critic Desmond Burton of the blog Afro Nerd. He also hosts Afro Nerd Radio on Blog Talk Radio. He joined us from our studios in New York City. You can find links to their blogs and ours at NPR News and Notes.org.